We're in the final throes of a very important deal. I guess you could say one of the most important deals in trade ever.
President Trump says a partial trade deal is close. It's Wednesday, November 27th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Beijing downplays Hong Kong election results, explaining impeachment, the business of coffee and tea. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump said Tuesday the United States was in the final throes in its attempt to reach a trade deal with China, but that at the same time, Washington stands with protesters in Hong Kong, where it wants to see democracy. At an Oval Office event to sign an executive order to address violence against Native American women, Trump was asked by a reporter if he had a message for the people of Hong Kong after their recent local elections, in which pro-democracy parties scored a resounding victory.
With them, I have a very good relationship, as you know, with President Xi. We're in the final throes of a very important deal. I guess you could say one of the most important deals in trade ever. It's going very well, but at the same time, we want to see it go well in Hong Kong, and I think it will. I think that President Xi can make that happen, and I know him, and I know he'd like to make it happen.
Trump was not specifically asked about congressional legislation to back protesters in Hong Kong that is sitting on his desk after being passed by the Senate and the House of Representatives last week. The legislation has greatly angered Beijing, and Trump has been vague about whether he would sign or veto it as he tries to strike a deal with China to end a damaging 16-month trade war. The legislation will automatically become law December 3rd if Trump opts to do nothing. These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Hong Kong leader mulls landslide opposition election victory. Probe sought over concern China can shut down Philippine power. Vietnam gets double dose of U.S. waterway diplomacy. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China's government has responded to the Hong Kong elections by emphasizing that the city will always be ruled from Beijing and warning against further protest violence. A week-long police siege of a university in Hong Kong may be winding down, closing one of the more violent chapters in the city's long-running anti-government protests. Dr. Carla Freeman, an associate professor of Chinese studies at Johns Hopkins University, speaks with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about China's reaction.
The general impression that I have is that Beijing was caught by surprise by not only the turnout, but the real almost complete reversal of the last, I guess it was a 2015 election, where you have now districts overwhelmingly controlled by pro-democracy candidates. So Beijing is figuring out how to deal with this, and what we've seen so far is a fairly muted public response by Beijing to the election results. The line that Beijing seems to be taking so far is the one that it has used consistently in international fora about the Hong Kong situation, which is to warn against interference in Hong Kong's affairs. And we had a statement by Foreign Minister Wang Yi, for example, emphasizing that point, and also making very clear that Beijing would tolerate no moves toward independence from Hong Kong. As far as I know, that was not on the table as far as these elections went. So my sense is that Beijing is figuring out how to respond.
Now, one of the big issues for the protesters has been the removal of Carrie Lam, who's the chief executive of the special administrative region. Is that likely to happen now?
Well, since October, we've been hearing rumblings that that Carrie Lam's removal could be by Beijing could be imminent. I think Beijing would like to see would like to use Carrie Lam until the absolute end of her utility to Beijing. But certainly, this was essentially a referendum on the lack of support by Hong Kong voters on Carrie Lam's leadership. So I think Carrie Lam herself has said she would be willing to resign. I think we will see some move to remove her. When that happens is unclear. I think, again, Beijing is figuring out its strategy.
Now, also, we have in this mix the U.S. legislation that passed last week, the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which is aimed at China. It implies a threat of sanctions or other action by the U.S. if things take a very bad turn for the worse in Hong Kong. How is China responding to that, and how does that play into all of this?
The United States, of course, has had the U.S. Hong Kong Policy Act in place since 1992 that related to the U.S. ability to continue to treat Hong Kong as an economy separate and apart from mainland China. But this new act adds some additional tools and allows the U.S. government to impose sanctions on individuals who are found to violate human rights in Hong Kong.
Dr. Carla Freeman, an associate professor of Chinese studies at Johns Hopkins University, she was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Donald Trump faces a process that could end with his removal as president of the United States. Impeachment hearings underway now in the House of Representatives are just the start of what is prescribed by the U.S. Constitution for the impeachment process. To better understand what is happening in U.S. politics, VOA's Steve Reddish has an overview of this unique and rarely used option.
Impeachment. The word has been around since mid-16th century England. It means to challenge credibility or validity. Impeachment is mentioned 6 times in the U.S. Constitution, but the document does not specify how it is to be carried out. Article 1 of the Constitution gives the House of Representatives, the lower but larger of the two chambers of Congress, the sole power of impeachment. The House investigates and then drafts articles of impeachment. A simple majority vote of the now 435 members is required to impeach. Impeachment does not automatically mean removal from office. Once the House approves articles of impeachment, the upper chamber of Congress, the Senate, holds a trial. From the U.S. Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the United States presides over that trial. 2/3 of the 100 senators are needed to vote to convict and remove from office.
Removing the President of the United States before an election is a drastic thing. And the Constitution does not want it to happen often. So they put in a very high bar, the 2/3, 67, and yes, it would have to be both parties.
Article 2 of the Constitution sets out the criteria and punishment. Removal from office on impeachment and conviction for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. 4 U.S. presidents have faced an impeachment inquiry by the House. 2 were impeached, none were convicted. Andrew Johnson was impeached in 1868 for firing the Secretary of War over the objections of the Senate amid repeated clashes over civil rights for newly freed African-American slaves. More than 100 years after Johnson's impeachment in 1974, Richard Nixon resigned before an impeachment vote could take place in connection with a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters and the subsequent cover-up of the crime. Bill Clinton was impeached in 1998 for lying under oath about a sexual affair with an intern. And now Donald Trump is facing an impeachment inquiry in the Democratic-controlled House for soliciting a foreign government to investigate a political rival. Impeachment hearings are underway, with a vote likely before the end of the year. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
Coming up, we take a little step back and serve some coffee and tea. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam says the results of local elections in which opposition candidates won nearly 90% of contested seats may be a reflection of unhappiness with her administration and its handling of pro-democracy protests. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the growing popularity of a specialty tea and a rare coffee bean are fueling interest and prices for these drinks in Asia, as we hear from Ira Melman in this week's edition of VOA Asia Business Scene.
Bubble tea fans can frolic at a pool of 100,000 plastic purple pearls, take photos on a bubble tea IV drip, and swing on a giant wrecking ball at a new exhibit in Singapore. The pop-up aims to be a one-stop happy place for visitors who love the tea-based beverage loaded with milk, sugar, and tapioca pearls. Originally from Taiwan, it's now popular across Asia, including in Singapore, which is home to over 37 bubble tea chains. Founder Tim Whiting said the exhibit took around 6 months to develop and 3 weeks to assemble in an unused car park. He settled on the concept of bubble tea after seeing how passionate people were about the subject.
Bubble tea just stood out, right? It was something that people are really passionate about. Sometimes I hear my friends or my colleagues like discussing which brand has the best tea, has the best pearls, and they get so heated up. And people actually argue over and fight over which one has the best tea. So that's when I realized that this is a concept that people would really feel close to their hearts and relatable and passionate about. This is something that we can build around.
Visitors can get a whiff of pine while walking through an enchanted forest of illuminated straws, experience tea-scented trees, and sniff at a wall of flavors labeled luscious, malty, or fresh. The bubble tea factory will close on December 18th, and Tan plans to bring the exhibit on tour to other countries in the region. An age-old crop is lending a caffeinated boost to the local economy of a remote highland town in Indonesia's Sumatra Island. Described as containing a strong aroma with a blend of sweetness and citrus acidity, Gayo Arabica is one of Indonesia's most sought-after coffee beans and can only be found in the town of Takengon. The bean's unique taste has led to a mushrooming of local cafes and opened up opportunities for local coffee farmers. Due to the town's remoteness and high elevation, which lies at 1,830 meters above sea level, coffee farmers in the past had to rely on middlemen that would underpay them for their product, awarding on average only $3.50 per kilogram. But thanks to a spike in demand and local government support, farmers can now sell their product directly to roasters or cafe owners, typically charging $21 per kilogram. Just like any foreign country, the coffee culture grows here in central Aceh, and there are many events like this, Coffee Expo. It is extraordinary. Some local students here also sent roasted coffee beans to Bandung, Jakarta, Medan, and other cities to fund for their living expenses and tuition fees. Indonesian coffee consumption has nearly doubled over the past 10 years, as many young residents who had studied in the West were influenced by coffee drinkers in those countries. For VOA Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on a lot of places online, like iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also follow many of our accounts on social media, like Instagram, YouTube, VOA Asia Twitter, and of course, our Facebook page, conveniently named VOA Asia. Quite easy to find. A lot of good stories on there each and every day. We hope you stop by, even drop us a comment and say hello. We'd love to say hello back. We like to thank everyone who's listening on the radio. Radioactive at Temasek Polytechnic in Singapore carries our program. We say hello to everyone there and invite you back as well. And we say hello to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel Rahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hayong Afra and Candace. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.